1450 KMAN.
And welcome back to In Focus. Actually, welcome to In Focus here, News Radio KMAN on a Monday. Brandon Peoples, Nick McNamara in studio here today. He's on the other side of the glass. We're joined by Dr. Tim Schaefer, assistant professor in the Department of Communication Studies at Kansas State University. Glad to have you on.
It's good to be here.
And we have him on here once a month. We talk about all things in political discourse, all that good stuff. And it seems like we were talking off the air here last Friday, I think, when we were previewing what was coming up on In Focus next week. Is that every time you're here, it's always after a major news event.
I don't know how I feel about that, but yeah, it seems like there are a lot of things going on these days.
We always have some fitting things to talk about here. You know, obviously, in the national level, there was the Mueller report coming out last week. There was a lot of people disagreeing on either side of the aisle of whether or not we should continue with that investigation. And I think it's interesting just to kind of see, the different ways that Democrats, Republicans are approaching it here at the national level.
Yeah, we're the reports out, particularly over the weekend, as, more people have a chance to look at the redacted version, right? The unredacted version still hasn't been released to members of Congress. So there's still those calls are being made to see the full report or as much as possible, given the status of some of the material still being connected to grand juries and such. But the question now shifts as we're seeing it, the current administration's pivoting away from this somewhat, although President Trump still seems to kind of be staying on this point in the ways that he had been. Whereas the Democrats are beginning to raise questions of what are the implications of this report and how do we proceed? How do they think about what they do? The question of impeachment becomes now another conversation point, whether or not that is something that comes to fruition or not. Right? I think one of the interesting wrinkles in the ongoing story here, but I think it's an important one. So. It'll be curious to see what happens in both the kind of immediate term in the next few days as we increasingly always have a topic and it spins out of the news cycle within a few days. This one's been around in the background considerably, right? A lot of speculation. And as we get maybe a little closer to the possibility of seeing some more, or as the general population has access to the redacted version of the document to begin to unpack some of the things that up to this point or in even recent days have been really unclear. So, I mean, it is interesting to note, I think the report has become a bestseller right now, even though it's free, so you don't have to buy it anywhere. But I mean, it speaks to, I think, people's interest, curiosity, and frankly, the implications for what this means when a foreign hostile government plays a role in our own politics, in our own elections. And that's a significant thing.
Yeah, this is something – it's fascinating. I mean, this is something we've never seen in most of our lifetimes here. Maybe the closest would be Watergate scandal with Richard Nixon here. But are you surprised at how long this has lasted and how the reaction has been, with Democrats continuing to press on, let's keep this thing in the news, keep it going?
Well, I think one of the biggest things is that, it's striking we have as a reference point Watergate and the Nixon administration and all that happened there. If you look at, in somewhat a comparative way, those two instances that and with what we're seeing now, these are really quite different things. One of the biggest factors that I think is playing to the favor of the current administration, frankly, is that we have a considerably more diffuse media kind of landscape, right? And so the opportunity to not have to rely on a few singular voices or channels, right? So the big three, for example, at that time, not filtering the print media, having obviously a critical role in all of that, breaking the story, the Washington Post and the Times playing a significant role as well, the New York Times. The landscape that we exist in now, I mean, there have been some interesting kind of opinion pieces in various long-form magazines in the recent days speaking to the implications of what are really polarized and selectively chosen sources of information, what do those things mean? What implications do those have for the ways that we understand what's going on? And if things are being filtered, right, regardless of whether you're supportive or not, there's not a common text, if you want to think of it that way, right, that we kind of draw from or kind of wrestle with or kind of deal with. We're working through a lot of other filtered media, and I think that has a huge implication. The fact that we're only beginning now to, after this report, which has documented a number of instances that could be made for obstruction, for example, just now becoming that conversation in contrast before when we were experiencing it and seeing some of these things. We knew some of this, but I think because we have such entrenchment in our media landscape as part of the climate, that's an element that helps, I think, things stay as they are, which is not good. And I'm not saying that it just needs to immediately go to a direction of that kind of congressional action, but I think it speaks to the ways in which we can find the things that confirm or reaffirm our own positions without having to wrestle with the complexity of having a narrative tell us what's going on, whether we agree with it wholly or not, or that's a different thing. But if we're all working from a common source, that's something different instead of having many.
This might be tangentially off topic, but it's related. It's related enough. You were talking about that sort of diffusion of media and sort of how we're unable to sort of have a common text, and we're talking about things through different filters. How does that impact what, you know, our this traditional topic of the marketplace of ideas? How does that impact it if we're not really wrestling with the marketplace itself? We're going to maybe a segmented marketplace as opposed to a broad marketplace.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good way to think about it, kind of with that image. The fact that we're not all showing up in the same place and making some decisions about that, right? I like that or I don't like that. Or I understand that, or I don't understand that. If we're not ever actually engaging in that kind of common area, if you want to, you know, I don't know how far we can take the marketplace image, but I mean, it's true though, right? If we're not all showing up in the same place, kind of bumping into each other, kind of hashing it out, talking about it in those ways, then we have what we have, right? Is this? I don't go to that store. You go to the other store, right? These kinds of things. So we're never bumping up against each other. So the old language that shows up in previous decades of kind of the or thinking particularly in rural communities where kind of the corner store plays that role, these kind of third spaces, the Cracker Barrel, right? The fact that people would show up in these little country stores and kind of hash it over what's going on, the day's news. You know, I think of my father, who passed away a few years ago, but he would get up every morning and there was a handful of these guys who'd all go get coffee at McDonald's and they'd sit and talk about things that are going on in the community, what sports teams were doing, what was happening in the news, local and otherwise. And if we don't have some of those kind of spots, those places where people have those points of interaction, not so much that they always have to agree, but at least have that opportunity for exchange, I think that's where the whole language of kind of the marketplace for ideas becomes, really important, but also challenged. I mean, we deal with that in higher education all the time. The contention right now, and it's been kind of waning a bit, but there has been one particular case that I've been involved with a bit at the University of Arizona. They were having a kind of a career day not too long ago, and invited were a couple Border Patrol agents to speak to a select group of students who were interested in this. Long story short, some students ended up protesting that meeting, came just outside of that door and were yelling certain statements and things about the Border Patrol. Long story short, those students got arrested, a third who was connected. So three students were arrested and charged by university police. And so now it's erupted into this big conversation. And in fact, this week they're going to have a campus conversation about tensions between free speech and sense of community, right? What does that mean at a place like a big public university? So, you know, University of Arizona is the land grant in Arizona. So in many ways, thinking about K-State and that kind of vein, how would we wrestle with those kinds of questions? And this is something that's really fundamental. And this is a big challenge of how do we think about both the idea of kind of the marketplace of ideas, where people can can say and act in certain ways, and at the same time, how do we not just go down the path that you can, should you say or do anything without repercussion or implications on people's safety, lives, those types of things?
Well, I notice whenever I go consume, especially the national news here, and I try to, decipher what's going on here, I want to be informed. I don't know if maybe everybody wants to be informed. It feels like a lot of people want to be persuaded here one way or the other. And a lot of us already have our predetermined beliefs here on how we feel about, the president or members of Congress. But explain how dangerous that is if you're not checking the various different sources here.
Yeah, I mean, the quickest and easiest thing that happens is just the immediate reinforcement of what you're saying, right? So the kind of enclave thinking, the kind of we often talk about it as being in your own bubbles. These types of things, depending on where you get information, and increasingly social media. I'll use Facebook as kind of an example. They're really good at what they do, which is also detrimental in some significant ways. They have a phenomenal algorithm or algorithms that figure out who you are, whether you've chosen to share that information or not, and have put you into certain categories, right? So you only see certain things, or you'll see more of particular kinds of material in contrast to other things, right? And especially if you self-select, be like, I don't want to see this, I find this offensive or whatever, right? They refine that algorithm. So the fact that you in theory might feel like, oh yeah, I'm seeing everything, you're really not, and it's by design, and because their incentive is to keep you on there looking at ads and things, and the thing that keeps you on there looking at ads and things is if you're by and large agreeing with and being fulfilled, pleased by what you're doing, right? And so if you're only coming up against things that are challenging everything you see or believe to be true, then that doesn't align with the business model. And so there are some really significant efforts that have been made. I often point people to something called All Sides. AllSides.org is a website that kind of is a news aggregator, but it will frame stories kind of from left, right, and center. And so you'll see what the headline is, and then you'll see how or the topic is, and you'll see how it's headlined and then expressed by related stories on that given topic. And sometimes they're pretty similar, but sometimes you can see very clearly, right, where some of these biases come out, even in the ways that something is framed, not even in the context of the story itself. And so there are some efforts that organizations are making to try to overcome this, but it's sometimes rote memory, right? The default, even if you're I find this all the time when I'm typing on my computer, I will by default type certain things just without thinking of what I'm doing, and that those preferences play out, and especially when it relates to where we get our information. And so I personally very intentionally try to read across kind of the ideological spectrum, part of my work, right? And so it's helpful for me to do that, but I would encourage lots of others to think about that way. Don't just go to the thing that reinforces your own perspective, or at least to understand why someone can and does hold a different set of views and beliefs about something. Because if the information that they're getting is being filtered through a really different type of source, then that has huge implications.
Let's take a break. We'll have more with Dr. Timothy Schaefer after this on News Radio KMAN.